You know what was on the jukebox in the front. Now Matt the Cat's gonna show you what was on the juke in the back.
Baby, how you been? I'm Matt the Cat and I'm back again. Let's take a spin with our 1948 old Rockola jukebox. It plays nothing but 78 RPM records, baby. 1940s and 50s, rhythm and blues is the news, and we keep you shaking from the top of your head to the soles on your worn-out walking shoes. For the next hour, we're gonna dive deep into a treasure trove of New York rhythm and blues vocal group records from one of the finest groups ever to make the stack of shellac, the Channels. They received massive airplay around New York, New Jersey, and the entire Northeast, but never had a national hit thanks to distribution issues. I like to say that the Channels are to the East Coast what the Penguins are to the West Coast. Maybe not the best-selling groups from each area, but they were definitely super influential on the scene. And what's going to make this an even better show is that I had the opportunity to interview Earl Lewis, the leader of the Channels, a few years back. So Earl is going to tell the Channels' story in his own words. And as you know, cats and kittens, that's the best way to get the information from the cat who was actually there doing it, or in this case, singing it. And man, can Earl sing with that high falsetto tenor. And that was the Channels' trademark from their very first record, The Closer You Are. Earl Lewis was raised in Upper Manhattan, just below Harlem, and would spend many afternoons at the Apollo Theater on 125th Street. He was singing in a local group called the Lotharios with bass singer Clifton Wright. The two of them soon joined another local group who was already named the Channels, and they started performing in amateur contests. This led them to audition at Bobby Robinson's store on 125th Street. Bobby, who was already a local legend in the record business as he had his Red Robin label years earlier, was just about to start up a new label called Whirlin' Disc. The first release for Whirlin' Disc Records in August of 1956 was the first record issued from the Channels. Now you know, backed with The Closer You Are. It's a classic vocal group record that defines the New York doo-wop scene of the mid-1950s. And right after this, the legendary Earl Lewis is going to tell you his story. Right here on your source for 1940s and 50s rhythm and blues, The Juke in the Back. Let's kick it off with their very first record. Here's Now You Know.
I need you, I got to have you.
August of 1956, Whirlin' Disc's first release, number 100. That's The Channels with Now You Know. And without further ado, cats and kittens, it's time to bring the great Earl Lewis to the studio. This is an interview I recorded several years back with the great Earl Lewis.
Your sound is very distinct. It's one of those things, it's like a calling card. You always know when there's a Channels record on.
good.
And thanks to your falsetto, that's pretty much what does it.
Well, you know what? That falsetto was put on the clothes you are accidentally.
Oh, please, tell me more.
Yeah, you know what happened? The three guys were singing the harmony, and I was waiting to do the middle part, the channel part. And I was just fooling around with the little melody while I was waiting, and the recording company said, wait a minute, let's go with that. So they decided to put it on the record, and it became the trademark of the Channels.
So you're talking about On the Closer You Are?
On the Closer You Are, yes.
All right.
And so then I said, well, I did it once, I'm not going to do it again. But that wasn't true, because it became our trademark, and it's Earl Lewis and the Channels.
The closer you are.
Manhattan on the west side.
The Channels were actually the joining of two groups, correct?
Correct. Okay, I was in a group with called the Lotharios. Clifton, the bass singer, and I were in this group called the Lotharios. And it just so happened the group disbanded. And three of the channels heard that we used to sing with the Lotharios. So they came down, they auditioned us. And the next day, we went up to this public school, PS113, and we won first place.
Hmm.
And that was the beginning of the channels.
Why the name, the channels?
Who knows?
Oh, okay.
I don't even know. I don't know.
Influences. I mean, you know, you must get asked this a lot. Like, what, coming up, what, who inspired you? Like, who did you want to sing like?
Well, you know, when I was a very young boy, I used to go to the Apollo Theater in New York with my sister. And I saw groups like the Five Keys, the Orioles, the Four Tunes, Ruth Brown. And those people really influenced me. But I never thought that I would be a singer. I just liked those songs. I never in my wildest dreams thought I would be a singer.
So it was just going to shows that really inspired you?
Yes, I liked the music.
What about the radio records? Were you buying records?
Yes, buying the Ravens and, you know, buying those. Well, they were older than I, so they bought those records and I liked them, so I just got into the music.
Telling you, Earl, you never sounded finer than on The Gleam in Your Eye.
Thank you, thank you.
That's a great
song. That's my favorite song, by the way.
You still like singing that today, huh?
Yes.
Tell me about the Continentals.
Oh, the Continentals. Well, you know what happened? We didn't know that the Continentals were going to be on the same recording session when we did The Closer You Are. And so they came in, and when they did that, Dear Lord, my goodness, we were terrified because we said, this song is so beautiful, The Closer You Are doesn't have a chance. And they recorded, and luckily they put out The Closer You Are before they put out Dear Lord, so we didn't have a problem with
You're
that.
You're okay.
Yep.
Did you have to start performing live right away as soon as the single came out?
Absolutely. 2 months later, we were at the Apollo Theater on 125th Street.
That must have been a big deal for you since you had been to the Apollo so many times, seeing other groups that
you
admired.
Yes, it was a big deal. I mean, I was like in seventh heaven. I thought, you know what?
Hmm?
When we appeared, when I recorded my first record, The Closer You Are, I thought I was a star, but you know what my mother told me?
What?
She said, there are no stars in this house. You will take out the dog, you will clean your room like you used to, okay? And she straightened me out right from the beginning.
So. Oh, man. That kind of spoils it a little bit.
It did. I thought they would be asking me for my autograph in the house. It didn't happen.
How old were you when The Closer You Are broke?
When The Closer You Are, I was 15.
Wow. That's amazing.
It's a long time, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so 2 months later, you're performing at the Apollo Theater. What about, were you guys asked to join any of those tours?
Yes, I went on a few tours, yes. We went on tours all around the country.
Did you do any of the Alan Freed tours?
You know, I never did an Alan Freed show.
I never did. You never even appeared on his radio show or anything like that?
Never.
That's interesting. Being a New York group and all.
Yeah, it was amazing that we never did. We never appeared on Alan Freed's show.
Did he play your records?
He played The Closer You Are and The Gleam in Your Eyes, yes.
Yeah, oh, okay. Cool. So, do you have any remembrances from those first couple tours that you did?
It was, you know, in the New York area, we had so many fan clubs. And whenever we appeared at the Apollo, I mean, I don't care who was on the show. It was like the channel's show. On the weekend, you know, because all the girls would come out. But during the week, everything went back to normal.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't go on long package tours?
No, I didn't go on long package tours, no.
Did you tour the South at all?
No, I didn't. Well, we went Washington. We went...
Did you play the Howard in Washington?
We went to Howard and the Royal and that circuit.
But speaking of shows, you put together some shows on your own, didn't you?
Well, you know, back in 1973, I had a partner called Sal Salzano, and we put on two shows at the Hotel Diplomat on 43rd Street and 6th Avenue in Manhattan. We had my hero, the Harp Tone, Willie Winfield. We had Willie Winfield, Arlene Smith, and the Chantels.
Oh, yes.
The Earls, Larry Jansen, the Earls. We had Don and Juan, the Dell Vikings. You know, we did two shows, and they were very successful. But then I decided maybe I should stick to singing instead of producing. There's a lot of work in producing shows, and it was just like a lot of work for me.
Well, there's stars in the sky like this. I do. There's no
generous support for Juke in the Back provided by weekly sustainers Janice Stenhouse, Robert Stallworth, Barry from San Diego, Mr. Lee, David Ayers, Thomas Huber, Joe Metzger, Bernie Rossman, Barry from Riverside, and contributors Mark and Marion McAlpine, Ken Farger, Gail Kuntz, Michael Carey. Thank you for your support. More information at jukeintheback.org.
You're listening to The Juke in the Back with Matt the Cat.
The Channels, spinning off of Bobby Robinson's Whirlin' Disc label out of Harlem, New York, from 1957, I Really Love You. Now, there were two versions of that tune issued at two different tempos. That one, believe it or not, was the fast version. I'm Matt the Cat, where it's at, and I'm presenting a solid hour of 1950s rhythm and blues, this week focusing on the vocal group sounds of The Channels and their leader, Earl Lewis, who I was fortunate enough to interview years back. Let's find out more of what the scene was like in the mid-1950s with this week's guest, Earl Lewis.
Tell me what the studio that you were using back in like 56, 57 was like. Do you remember those days?
Yeah, it was Beltone Studio down in the 40s.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, Beltone had a great reputation.
Yeah, we did a lot of our recordings at Beltone. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, a lot of the big companies used to call Bobby Robinson from Whirling Disc. When they had new artists come by, they would call him to get his opinion about the sound, because he had an ear for the sound. His label wasn't, I don't think it was national, but he had a national ear. He had an ear for
a national ear, that's good.
A national ear for the sound. They relied on his ability to pick hits.
Did you guys record, you were recording this with the band in the same room with you, right?
Yeah, well, you know, in those days, they didn't have arrangements. Mm-hmm. You know, you just went, you got down to the went down to the studio, and you would just sing the song for the guys in the band, and everybody would jump in.
So, you just kind of showed them how the song was supposed
yes,
to go.
And they just built the music around what you were doing. And it was good, it was good.
And were you guys gathered around one microphone?
I think we used two mics.
For the vocals?
The background and the lead, two mics. So sometimes it was hard to separate. Like if someone was singing an off note in the background, it was hard to fix it up. You would have to do the whole thing over. You know, it's not like today. You have, you know, each person has a mic, so you take that voice out and you redo it.
Yeah, you can multi-track it today, and you can just punch in and fix a part.
But sometimes those off notes and whatever were very interesting.
How long, this is kind of an odd question, but how long did it take for, after you guys left the studio, for the record to appear? It was pretty quick, right?
Well, in most cases, yeah, it was pretty quick. I think Bobby Robinson, as soon as we left the studio, the record was playing on some station somewhere. And, you know, it was a very short time after you recorded the records, they put them out. We didn't leave anything in the can. You know what the can means, right?
Yeah, left to unreleased.
Yeah, because a lot of people, you know, especially when the oldies started, a lot of people were looking for unreleased stuff. And I'm sure a lot of groups went and recorded songs at that time and said, oh, this is unreleased, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, what that's all about.
Speaking of when you just talked about, like, with oldies and stuff, I mean, the first real oldies revival seemed to happen in around 60, 61, 62 in New York, around Times Square Records and things like that. Did you guys experience, like, a real big influx in popularity?
We did experience that. And what happened, we were working so much, and we thought, well, gee, we'll go to the studio and record and, you know, be rediscovered. But and we did shows, and we would try to soup the songs up, you know, jazz them up, because we didn't want to be known as oldies. We wanted to be content. We thought that someone would come along and rediscover us.
Right.
And I was singing in a club, I'll never forget. I was singing in a club in Jersey, yeah, a place called Revelation. And I'm souping the song up. When I first saw you, baby, you know, I just saw you. And a woman, I'll never forget, and she put me right on the right track. She came up to the stage and she said, listen, we appreciate what you're trying to do, but we would like for you to sing the song as close to what it was. And she was right.
Yeah.
Because you're going to see the close you are, not a jazzed up version of it.
And you can't change a good thing.
No, so she put me on the right track, and I hope I'm still on that track. I'd like to believe that I am.
Boom, 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 boom.
What do you do when I...
do you do by The Channels, this week's feature on the Juke in the Back, your source for 1940s and 50s rhythm and blues, the soul that came before rock and roll. And I just want you to know that I love everything about that song, from its Latin-tinged beat to its sax break to the change in feel. Man, that is one of their greatest records. And just like the rest of their records, it unfortunately did not chart, though their records did chart locally in the New York area. We'll have more from this week's feature, Earl Lewis, coming up in just a few minutes here on The Juke in the Back. Now let's hear their next release for the Whirlin' Disc label, 1957, and a tune that sounds a lot like The Closer You Are. It's Flames in My Heart.
Well, my mind was made.
You know what happened with that?
What?
How we came to record That's My Desire?
Tell me the story, Earl Lewis.
Okay, we were recording with Whirling Disc, and I think they sort of got tired of us. You know, we weren't doing the hits anymore. So we heard about George Goldner down on 51st Street in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
We went down there. Richard Barrett was there.
Oh.
The day we went down there.
Wow.
And we had some other songs like All Alone and The Girl Next Door. And we sang those songs for George Goldner. And Richard Barrett said, listen, I have a song for you. So he told us, he gave us the song. He told us exactly how to sing it. We recorded it a week later, and the song came out and was a hit for us.
That's amazing.
Yep, he told us exactly how to sing the falsetto and to sip a little glass of wine, and it was a successful song for us.
Now it's time for the Great 78, where we take a thick piece of shellac and harken back to a time when 78 RPM records were king. This week we're featuring the Channels, so let's hear the flip side of their first single for Gone Records from 1957. The A side was That's My Desire. If you flipped it over, you'd find Stay As You Are, another Channels classic, featuring the guys singing group harmony with Earl Lewis's falsetto soaring throughout the record. It's this week's Great 78, The Channels with Stay As You Are.
Beware, be an angel as
Of rock and roll. You couldn't hear them on the jukebox in the front. But Matt the Cat's playing them on the juke in the bag.
Behind the story on My Love Will Never Die?
My Love Will Never Die by Earl Lewis and who? Okay.
The Channels?
Not so.
The Channels aren't with you on that record?
No, it's Clifton the bass and Earl Lewis, but we had the Starlights because the Channels had broken up at that time, and we came up with this song, but we didn't have a group. And the bass knew the Starlights, so they did the background on My Love For You Will Never Die and Bye Bye Baby.
I know I love you. My love for you will never die.
released in March of 1959, My Love Will Never Die, The Channels, this week's feature on The Juke in the Back, and Earl Lewis, and they were back with Bobby Robinson on another Bobby Robinson label, Fury Records. Still sounding great, but still chart success was eluding them. Let's flip My Love Will Never Die over right now to hear Bye Bye Baby. I'm Matt the Cat, and I hope you're enjoying this week's Juke in the Back on one of New York's finest vocal groups, The Channels.
Well, pop, 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 bye, bye, baby. Oh, I really love you so.
Now it's time to close down this week's feature on Earl Lewis and the Channels. Earl's going to tell us a fantastic story about the recording of their version of the now doo-wop classic, Gloria.
This is the story. It was recorded in 1956 a cappella, okay? And when in 1973, when I produced a couple of shows, we came across the recording from Brownstone Records. It was just like a label. I don't think they recorded anything else, but they had Gloria. So we got it from them, and we put music behind the song. So that's why the music, if you listen to the music, you'll say to yourself, well, gee, this couldn't have been recorded in 1956. But the song was recorded in 1956. We put the music in 1973, and then we released it.
All right, let's play it right now since we've been talking about it. So, like you said, the vocals were recorded in 56.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But the music behind it is from 73.
Right.
All right, let's hear Gloria. I mean, out of all the renditions of Gloria, of course, Earl Speedo Carroll did a fantastic job of the song with the Cadillacs, Vito and the Salutations, but you guys are right up there.
Well, thank you so much.
It's not my real name. boom, 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 boom.
Oh, what a fantastic rendition of that classic tune. Gloria, Earl Lewis and the Channels. And as mentioned before, the music was from 73, but the original vocal parts were recorded in 1956. Earl released that on his own label in 73, Channel Records. I'd like to thank Earl Lewis for spending some time with us. That's a wonderful interview that I recorded years ago, but still sounds fresh today. And incidentally, Earl Lewis has written a book, his own autobiography, called How'd You Like Me Now?, which goes into a lot more detail of the subject matter that we discussed on today's program. Earl is also still performing, so for more information, check your local concert guides. I'm Matt the Cat, and I hope you've enjoyed this week's program. Until next time, remember, soul is a feeling, and you get that feeling each week when you tune into your source for 1940s and 50s rhythm and blues, The Juke in the Back. And if you dug the show and you'd like to let me know, drop me a line at mattthecat@mattthecat.com. Plus, you can find playlists and more information on all the music you heard on this week's program by dropping by jukeintheback.org. For Miss Rosie, I'm Matt the Cat saying have a great week, everybody, and I'll catch y'all on the flip side next time. Bye-bye.
Well, we've run out of whiskey, and the women have all gone home. Thanks for dropping by. Feel free to let Matt the Cat know if you dug the show. Email him at mattthecat@mattthecat.com. Juke in the Back is recorded at Rosie's Juke Joint, located at the Stepping Stone Inn in Salem, Massachusetts. For more information, please visit jukeintheback.org. I'm Miss Rosie. See you next time on The Juke in the Back.